He's the man who can escape anything. He's Mr. Miracle. And it's time to talk about his daring adventures because your geek history lesson on Scott Free is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason Miraculous Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or new god from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. And Jason, who is it again that we are talking about today?
We are talking about Mr. Miracle. This is a lesson, of course, that was suggested by the amazing Victor Clarence Rocco, which is really great. I'm glad that they suggested that because Mr. Miracle is a kind of a favorite new god character of mine. But we're talking about it because there is a brand new comic book series called Mr. Miracle that's coming out from DC Comics this very week. Written by Tom King with art by Mitch Gerrits. And you're going to want to stick around to the very end of this podcast because we have an interview with Mitch Gerrits, the artist of the new Mr. Miracle series, later on in this show. And I'm really excited about it because Mitch has been a very good friend of this podcast for a long time. And I'm really excited about that. So enough ping, 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 mother boxing around.
Let's get life is all.
Ooh, dark side is. But let's get into the first section of our podcast, Ashley.
Which is the 10-cent origin, where Professor Jason is going to lay down all the basic constructs, creators, and rules that you need to know about Mr. Miracle in case you go to a sick cocktail party on Apocalypse and they want to know what is up with that Scott Free guy.
Can you imagine the colors at a New Gods cocktail party?
It would be, I've never done acid, but what I imagine acid being like.
Yes, it would be. All right. Mr. Miracle, of course, is a DC Comics character. He first appeared in Mr. Miracle number one April 1971. He was created by Jack Kirby, who also wrote and drew that book.
Ooh.
His alter ego is Scott Free. His species is New God. His place of origin is New Genesis. He's not a human. Many people think he's a human. No, New God. His team affiliations have been the Justice League and the Justice League International. His abilities are New God physiology, including agelessness. Yes, Mr. Miracle is basically immortal.
Ooh.
He's a super escape artist, a genius inventor, a master fighter. He has indomitable will. He has knowledge of the anti-life equation. He has the alpha effect, and he possesses advanced technology such as Mother Box, Aerodisc, and the Multicube.
Indomitable will. I didn't know that was a superpower until this very moment.
Because it's how he escapes things.
I guess.
Ashley, let's go to the next section of the podcast, the Meet Cute.
The Meet Cute is the part of the podcast that we stole from romantic comedy writing where we tell you where we first met this character and how cute it was.
Ashley, how did you first meet Mr. Miracle?
I have no idea how I first met Mr. Miracle. He's not a character that I've read a ton of.
There's not a lot of ton to read, to be honest with you.
So I honestly can't remember, like, when I don't have a recollection, a very strong moment of first hearing about this character. I mean, even Orion, I feel like I heard about, like, way before. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, I don't have a good meet cute for this round.
Oh, okay.
How about you? When did you first meet Mr. Scott Free?
It's kind of similar, because Mr. Miracle is sort of a DC Comics character that I always knew about. He kind of was always in my knowledge, sort of in my lexicon. But
yeah.
I never read the Kirby Mr. Miracle series until about, like, 3 or 4 years ago, actually. I didn't read any of the Fourth World stuff until about 3 or 4 years ago, to be honest with you.
It's dense. It's difficult.
It's tough to read. And it's not really welcoming to, I would say, a kid.
I would definitely agree with that. Yeah.
I think you have to be like college level or above to kind of appreciate what Kirby is going for in that, because it's very dense, it's very layered. And if you were to read it just by yourself, you'd be like, this is stupid. But if you read it and appreciate what he's trying to do, then you're like, oh, this is kind of brilliant.
It is very brilliant.
So ahead of its time. So I kind of knew about him. He's randomly shown up in like 90s DC comics all the time, but it was actually Seven Soldiers of Victory by Grant Morrison that got me to love him.
Oh, that might have been the first thing that I ever read that he was in that was impactful.
Fun fact, he's barely in it.
I know, but he is in it, which is the key.
Yeah. Okay, let's drop into History 101.
Which is the main meat of the lesson where Professor Jason is going to lay down all the Scott-free knowledge.
Okay, so before we can travel to the fourth world, and before I can open your minds, Mind University students, I got to tell you some publication history.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Miracle was one of four comic books set in the fourth world by Jack Kirby. They were very ambitious. He liked to call them the Fourth World Saga. This character, Mr. Miracle, was inspired by the early illusionist career of comic book artist Jim Steranko. Now, you may know Jim Steranko. yeah, you may know Jim Steranko from his epic run on Nick Fury, Agent of the Shield.
Yeah.
Well, Jim Steranko, before he became comic artist, was an illusionist. He was a magician. So, also, the character's relationship, Scott Free's relationship with Big Barda, is based on Jack Kirby's relationship with his wife.
Is she an Amazon? Is she a giantess?
No, but apparently she has the fiery attitude of Big Barda.
Oh, I love Big Barda, and that just made me love her even more.
I actually really love that, because I do love that Jack Kirby made Big Barda, because here's the rub. Jack Kirby has done a lot of stuff. Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, all that stuff like that. I almost think that Orion and Mr. Miracle are more Jack Kirby's creations than probably the Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four are very much Stan Lee.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Like, if you ask me Jack Kirby, I almost immediately want to say Orion or Mr. Miracle. So I think there's something nice that Big Barda, Scott Free's love, is based on him and his wife, to the same thing as Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm are based on Stan Lee and his wife.
Oh, that's so sweet. I never knew that.
So it's kind of stuff like that. Also, fun fact before we go any further into this lesson, before we get into the character history. Again, I mentioned it in the 10 Cent origin. Like all new gods, Scott Free is extremely long-lived. He's practically immortal. And due to him being a new god, he's actually a superhuman. He's stronger, he's faster, he's more agile, and he's more durable than humans.
Great.
And actually, for a time, Scott discarded his divine right in immortality to live as a human, but since then he's regained it.
Yeah, because why would you give up immortality?
Exactly. So, Scott Free is a god.
Just go with it.
Just go with it. He's not a human being, so don't mistake him as a human being.
Yeah, like Thor.
Yes.
Thor is a god.
There you go. Now to his story. Originally, the boy known as Scott Free was the son of Highfather, the ruler of New Genesis. However, as part of a diplomatic move to stop a destructive war against the planet of Apocalypse, Highfather agreed to an exchange of children with his enemy, Darkseid.
Mm-hmm.
In doing so, he surrendered Scott Free to the care of his enemy while he received his son's enemy, Orion. So Orion was the son of Darkseid, Scott Free is the son of Highfather. They switched to do a peace accord. Now, I did a lot of research in this, and there is no definitive answer for how old Scott Free is.
Mm.
I saw in one account many people actually think him to be a couple thousand years old. So this trade on Apocalypse, who knows how many thousands of years ago it happened? We have no idea how long Scott Free actually suffered on Apocalypse.
Wow, that's crazy to think about.
Yes. Now, in the Jack Kirby series, they make you feel that it's very recent.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to say. There's no proof. We don't know.
There's no definitive timestamp on
exactly.
That.
Exactly. I like the idea that it did take 1,000 years.
Cool.
Or even longer. But just go with that. Keep that in your mind as well. That's all the new gods is. It's like, put another layer on here.
Yeah, really?
Okay. Now, Scott grew up in one of Granny Goodness's terror orphanages with no knowledge that he was actually the son of Highfather.
I got a terror orphanage.
Now, Ashley, do you want to explain who Granny Goodness is, just very briefly?
Granny Goodness is basically an evil apocalyptician who looks like an old lady.
Yeah, she basically trains Darkseid soldiers.
Yes.
Yeah, but she looks like an old lady. As he matured, Scott rebelled against the totalitarian ideology of Apocalypse, and he hated himself for not being able to fit into that society. He couldn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was influenced by Metron. Metron's this new god that rides around in his chair and can see the future.
Oh, yeah. When, as soon as he said that, I was like, that's the chair, right?
Yeah, yeah. Metron would come visit Scott Free during his captivity and kind of see, like, there's a future for you beyond Darkseid.
Maybe you don't know this, and it's okay. It's just Metron doesn't know that Scott is – that there's a swappy swappy. Nobody knows that.
Oh, Metron knows exactly.
Oh.
Here is
I don't know that much about Metron, I'm sorry.
Here is kind of a little bit more of the suffering of Scott Free. Scott Free's story is all about suffering and going against that suffering and that oppression.
In my brain, he's now played by Chief O'Brien.
Scott didn't learn that he was a member of New Genesis until many years into adulthood.
Mm.
So he's just this kid who has no idea that he's not supposed to be here. And he just like, and he wants to fit in. Like, he wants to be one of these killer soldiers. And he's like, why do I like people?
Yeah.
It's just so tough. And then also only like the royal families of Apocalypse, like the upper echelon, mm-hmm. knew who Scott Free actually was.
Mm, okay.
So it's the same thing, like Orion for many years didn't know he was the son of Darkseid.
Yeah.
And he had the like kind of an opposite struggle where he was like, why am I so angry?
Yeah, and every time they draw him angry, he's got like Jack Kirby eyebrows. It's
exactly,
amazing.
Exactly. So Scott then became a band of pupils that were tutored by a secret rebel known as Hymon. Or Hymon, H-I-M-O-N. He is a New Genesian living as a hunger dog on Apocalypse. So this was a New Genesis member that was hiding undercover for the enemy, right?
Ooh, that's cool. He's a spy.
It was at these meetings with fellow pupil rebels that he met for the very first time Big Barda. She was also one of these rebels.
Yes.
Eventually, Scott Free escaped and fled to Earth. And his escape was actually long anticipated and also planned for by Darkseid. Darkseid made it a little bit easier for him to escape because Darkseid wanted to nullify the pact between Darkseid and Highfather. And Scott Free's escape gave Darkseid the excuse to revive the war against New Genesis.
What a dick.
Yeah, exactly. Darkseid is a dick.
Hashtag Darkseid is a dick.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Miracle is now on Earth, and this is where the Jack Kirby series where Mr. Miracle makes his debut is, and this is his first appearance, mm-hmm. and this is where I'm going to synopsize these issues for you because, of course, this is a debut, and it's over the course of his 25-issue series that you learn all these details that I told you about, but I wanted you to know Scott Free's specific origin about the mythology and stuff like that because it's very Zeus-like, it's very Thor-like, and I think understanding that will give you a better understanding of the craziness that I'm about to tell you.
Great. I love it. I'm ready for it.
So in issue one, Scott Free observes a man named Thaddeus Brown who is in the classic red and yellow Mr. Miracle costume. He observes him getting into a burning box. And Scott Free's like, oh no, this man's going to burn himself alive. And he tries to rescue him over the protests of Thaddeus's assistant, Oberon, who is an old man little person.
Yes.
Who is a classic Mr. Miracle character. Now, Thaddeus, calling himself Mr. Miracle, escapes the box just as some thugs for Intergang attack the both of them.
For Intergang?
Yep. Ashley, who is Intergang?
Intergang is like an evil spy organization in the DC universe?
No, they're an evil gangster gang for
gangster
the DC
gang.
Universe. They're generally based in Metropolis. They're usually a Superman villains.
Oh, I think I was conflating them with Cadmus a little bit.
You might be. Yeah, Intergang is a Jack Kirby creation.
I didn't know that.
Intergang is also generally a bunch of mooks, thugs, who are given advanced weaponry from Darkseid. Because here's the thing about all of Jack Kirby's characters. They're all related. They all tie into the fourth world saga. Four different titles all feed into each other.
Wow, that's ambitious.
One of these titles was Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen.
I knew that. Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. Okay, so Intergang attacks them. Scott easily dispatches all the thugs and then learns that they work for a man called Steelhand, who we suddenly cut to just smashing beans of, you know, steel for no reason, just for fun. But he has a steel hand.
Cool.
Back at Thaddeus's house, Thaddeus mentions that he is preparing for the big trap, and Scott offers to help. So to help, Thaddeus and Oberon chain Scott up. And then suddenly the chains explode as Scott reveals that he has a machine that can create an intense magnetic repulsion.
Wow.
Then Thaddeus gets into his Mr. Miracle costume and practices for his big trap. And by this first issue, it kind of seems like the big trap is just to be tied to a big pole as Oberon releases a giant metal ball down a hill to crush him. That seems to be the big trap.
That does feel very like Gold and Silver Age DC Comics, though. Yep. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, 1971.
Yeah. Like, perfect.
Mr. Miracle Thaddeus Brown is unable to escape. Like a secondhand Iron Fist, I was trying to make a joke, didn't quite work. Scott Free whams the ball away with his fist because we learn that the reason why Thaddeus didn't escape is because right as Oberon was releasing the ball, an Intergang sniper shot Thaddeus. So Thaddeus was too injured
to
escape.
Wow, that came out of left field.
It did, and it kind of does come out of left field in the comic book. Thaddeus passes away as Scott uses the calming pings of a mother box to soothe him. And yes, Thaddeus says that he thinks the ping, ping, ping is comforting. Now, really quick, before we go too far, Ashley, do you want to give a really brief explanation of what a mother box is?
A mother box is a cube that you get from Apocalypse, and it creates boom tubes so that you can travel back and forth from place to place. And depending on who's writing it, it is nebulously and completely powerful in every way you could imagine.
Mm-hmm. It's also a piece of new Genesis technology as well.
Oh, that was specific to Apocalypse.
But it's sentient. It's alive.
Yes.
And when it makes noises, it goes ping, ping, ping. Now, when Jack Kirby drew them, it's only until recently that they actually, in the last like 20 years, that they've become cubes. When Jack Kirby drew them, they kind of look like the ultimate nullifier from Fantastic Four.
Ooh, imagine why that is.
But in this period, kind of imagine like a cell phone with like a little antenna on top.
Yeah, fun fact, there's a Twitter account that's just at Motherbox, and it just tweets ping, ping, ping at people
And if you hashtag Darkseid, it'll ping, ping, ping at you.
Yeah, it's the best.
DC Collectibles a couple years ago made a collectible Motherbox. I got it. It's one of my favorite things ever, and there's a certain setting on it where like it makes all these loud, like it makes the boom, it goes, but like one of them goes ting, ting, ting.
Yeah, so I always try to turn it so that you can't press the button.
I love it. Back in issue one, Oberon then reveals that Thaddeus and Steelhand had a bet that Steelhand could stop Thaddeus from escaping an escape-proof trap. So this is the reason why these gangsters have been coming after him.
Jesus.
A bet. So while Steelhand wrestles a robot, I'm not making that up. Scott
doesn't
Free.
Doesn't look like a mother box.
No, it just looks like a giant robot. It looks like Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Oh my God.
Scott Free dresses as Mr. Miracle and then attacks Steelhand. Steelhand gets the upper hand and ties Scott to a rocket and then launches it into the air to blow it up. Scott later shows up in his office having escaped the blast somehow, and Scott captures Steelhand, deciding to continue the Mr. Miracle act with Oberon.
So Ashley, you know, what else would you do but take up the guy's mantle who you just met?
So Ashley, I want to ask you, what did you think about the first issue of Mr. Miracle?
I think it really belabors the point that he's an escape artist, but I like the level of crazy that is involved here, and I would expect no less.
Yeah.
I think it's not, it actually, I was like, oh, read that.
Mm-hmm. In issue two, Scott builds a duplicate Mr. Miracle robot and then puts it in a straitjacket to practice blowing it up.
Why?
I love that you're trying to question the fourth world craziness. I also have to mention that at this time, Scott has all this cool tech that runs up his sleeve. They show the shot several times where he pulls up his sleeve and there's all this cool tech. And he has this little harness for the mother box that sits on his bicep.
Oh, that is cool.
Yep.
Like a pack of cigarettes.
But there's also supposed to be like full of other like fourth world tech that he can use. Like basically a lot of these early issues, Mr. Miracle has all kinds of like future tech that can basically do anything. And he has all kinds of other devices besides the mother box.
That's cool. I love that.
So and then Granny Goodness shows up, and we talked about Granny Goodness as all. And basically she reveals that Scott Free is the only person to have ever escaped from her dungeons. Now Scott tries to kill himself in a new throw knifey spears out of abdomen trap thing that he just built. It's weird. He's basically tied to a pole and spears are coming at him.
Love it.
He survives, of course.
Well, it's only issue two.
Yep. But then the Mr. Miracle robot, another one that he built, wakes up as the troops from Apocalypse invade Thaddeus' old house that Scott's now living in and steal this robot, thinking that it's Scott Free.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Scott sees it happening and puts on his aero disc to follow them. Now, these are the little flying discs that you always see Scott Free flying around in the comic books, and this is the first time they've appeared.
Very cool.
Now,
very cool.
Scott attacks Granny. But then she forces them into the X-pit, as she calls it, that somehow is in the floor of this normal house that Granny Goodness is just hanging out in.
Well, she's a magical fourth world being, so don't
worry
about it.
And this X-pit is a crazy alien prison.
Is there just a bunch of X-Men hiding in it?
No, it's just like a lot of weird colors and lines.
Oh, cool. So more acid.
Yep. Scott and Oberon break out of the prison and tell Granny to dry up and blow away.
Great.
That's exactly what they say.
I have no doubt.
They say, dry up and blow away, Granny Goodness, and then the issue ends.
I mean, I guess that's pretty rude for the 70s.
I really want dry up and blow away to actually return to the lexicon.
Sure. People can tweet them at us.
Dry up and blow away, Ashley.
You old bag.
You old building loan.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, here we're going to go to issue number three now.
I'm so excited.
The villain Dr. Bedlam boom tubes to Earth for his evil plan. to call scot-free on the phone.
I was pretty sure you were going to say to tie scot-free up, from which he will escape.
Nope. His master plan is to call scot-free on the phone.
Well, it's the time before cell phones, so.
So on the phone, him and Scott set a nice date to battle like gentlemen. And Scott arrives to Bedlam and sees him still sitting in the same parlor that he made the phone call from. Bedlam tries to arrest him in honor of Darkseid, but then Dr. Bedlam reveals that the entire building, he's in a skyscraper, is a trap for Scott to escape from. Before we learn that Dr. Bedlam is not actually in the room, just his mind is in the room, and he took over this robot form that is called an animate. And the animate...
So this is the second robot in three issues.
Yep. So the robot becomes white and formless as Bedlam takes his mind back to Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And suddenly, Scott is left in a building full of crazy, mind-controlled people who try to fight him at every turn.
Great.
They capture him. They put him in a giant treasure chest, basically, and they throw him over the stairs, which apparently this building has like a giant opening where all their stairs are, and it looks like he's falling like 1,000 floors.
This is like some Robin Silver Age level nonsense where it's like, tie him to something and throw him.
Basically, yeah. Or tie him to a pole, and here comes the ball
right,
down the
exactly.
hill.
Exactly.
And that's where the issue ends.
Awesome.
Now, issue 4 is where Big Barda is introduced for the very first time.
Yes, I've been waiting so long.
When she is introduced, she is still working for Darkseid. And she arrives at the building that Scott was in and captures the chest just at the time to find out that, oh, no, Scott wasn't in the chest. He's actually up in the stairs like 4 levels above, and he'd already escaped. He didn't need her help, basically.
Oh, well, good for him.
But he soon gets captured again. And when he's captured on that floor before Barda can get to him, he's taken into a room where there's a movie shoot going on that was somehow shooting in this building, and he's forced into this movie against his will where suddenly he has to fight people in this movie. I don't know what it is about Jack Kirby, because we have a previous thing in the Fantastic Four episode where Namor has a building, and he captures the Fantastic Four.
And he's trying to seduce Sue Storm.
Yeah, and he tries to seduce the Fantastic Four to be in his movies. I don't know. Jack Kirby had a thing about movies.
I guess he wanted to be in the movies.
I guess so, and he was always mad that he couldn't be.
That's so funny.
So Barda basically bulldozes through everybody in the building, gets up to the movie studio.
Heck yes, she does.
Saves Scott free, and then says that his costume is kind of ghastly and that she barely recognizes him in it. But they retire to his home, where Barda basically gets in her underwear as Scott cooks a giant pot roast.
Well, they like each other, so.
Yep. Now, I will say that in my research in terms of – I couldn't read the entire Jack Kirby miniseries. I read a good portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere between now and when they get married is when she stops working for Darkseid.
Well, sure, of course. So,
but Ashley, really quickly, do you want to say who is Big Barda to you? Like, do you like Big Barda? Like, how do you, why
oh,
do you,
I
why
was
do
like,
you,
what do you mean?
Well, why do you like Big Barda so much?
Okay, so Big Barda, why I like her is because she's big. It's sort of the same thing about Wonder Woman. Like, I really like it when they make the Amazons taller than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely a rejection of the traditional male and female paradigm.
Yeah.
To have her be taller than everybody else around her. I also really like her because, I mean, New Genesis can be like as beautiful and futuristic as you want to say it is. Anywhere the New Gods go is a freaking horrible place.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the fact that she can come out of that and still be a good person. But I do like that she doesn't take guff from anyone.
No,
like she will
not a single person,
tell
no.
Batman that she thinks he's stupid and wrong. Like, she's really tough. And that's what I've always liked about her. And I mean, her armor and her design. And that just goes back to how
all
amazing
of the
Kirby
designs
is.
Are amazing.
She is one of the most amazing
yep.
looking characters that have ever come out of comics.
Now, because I feel you cannot have a Mr. Miracle lesson without Big Barda, I have to explain to you who Big Barda is.
Yay! Mini Big Barda lesson.
Now, here's the difference between Barda and Scott Free.
Mm.
We know how old Barda is.
How old is she?
Barda was born of the race of New Gods. 250 years ago on Apocalypse.
So she's 250 And change.
She's 250 and change. Scott, we don't know. Scott could be thousands of years old.
Oh, so he's like cradle robbing.
Yeah. she is a product of Granny Goodness's home for orphan youth. Granny's motto is die for Darkseid. And Granny grooms Barda to one day lead the Female Fury Battalion, a ferocious pack of woman warriors. The Furies is basically they call them. However, during a raid, Barda meets Scott Free, Darkseid's adopted son, and sensing a peace about him, falls in love with that.
She falls in love with his goodness.
Yep. Barda risks her own safety to help Scott escape from Apocalypse. And eventually, Barda turns her back on Granny and comes to Earth herself. And of course, that's when they meet. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about the love of Mr. Miracle and Big Barda, which I actually think is one of the best love stories in comic books.
Aww. This is turning all sweet and romantic.
It is. It's because all of the Fourth World characters are about themes and emotions. Mm-hmm. And there's so much about these themes and emotions that their stories can really, they don't have much subtext because they are what they are, but you have to see them as that.
Yeah.
Now, I want to tell you, now Barda is ridiculously, hilariously aggressive, right? She smashes
very aggressive
through everything. Barda, as I said, is not one of the peaceful new gods of New Genesis. She's from Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And not only that, she was trained to be one of the most aggressive, brutal, and utterly ruthless warriors on that planet. Scott Free, on the other hand, is a son of Highfather, the ultimate force of good. And even though he's subjected to every bit of hell, evil, and torture that Darkseid can throw at him, it does not corrupt him, because that is the ultimate theme of Jack Kirby's Fourth World, that no matter what, good can always beat evil. However, because of that, well, not however, but evil can never hope to compete basically with good on its own terms. And that is why I think he has Big Barda and Scott fall in love, because she loves Scott and she's not going to let a little thing like an entire planet built on a foundation of severing that has done everything it can through her entire life to force her to be an unthinkable killing machine. She's not going to let that stop her from reuniting with the person that she loves and making a new life with him. Because for Barda to walk away from Apocalypse is a bigger sacrifice than Scott Free's sacrifice. Scott Free was not from Apocalypse.
It doesn't mean anything to him.
It doesn't mean anything to him. Even though he didn't know it, he's naturally part.
He has
part.
No connection there,
exactly. He's living in a situation that's oppressive and horrible. She's living in a situation that, while it's still oppressive and horrible, but it's one that plays to her strengths.
She's bred for it, yeah.
Yeah, she's built for it. She's good at it. She's the best person on that planet at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what she does. Because there's something she wants out there more that makes her fight against every natural inclination of her soul.
Cue the Beatles, All You Need Is Love.
Exactly. And that's why I think behind Superman and Lois Lane's relationship in the DC Universe.
Jason's number one OTB.
Yep. Scott Free and Big Barda are number two.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Well, I wanted to ask you, what do you like their relationship as much as I do?
I really do. I don't know as much about them as you do, which is obviously why you're the one teaching this lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like it. And I feel like in comics, sometimes characters are forced to be together because they have been for a long time. But when you can offer like a metatextual context like that, where you understand that the characters need each other, it's more powerful. And I think this is a wonderful example of it.
Yeah.
I also do want to add that if you're into DC superhero girls in the novels that they write, Big Barda just joined the school and she beats up people with her mega rod.
Is Scott in there yet?
Scott is the boy she has a crush on.
Ah, there you go.
So their romance has made it all the way to DC.
Have they called him Mr. Miracle in it yet?
No, he's just Scott.
Okay. But even in DC Superhero Girls, you have to have them end up together.
Yeah.
They're always married.
So there you go.
That's great. And that's a nice thing. But you know what else is nice? Hmm. Anyone who gives us support over at patreon.com/Jawin.
You're right.
Ashley, I want to ask you, we asked this last episode. I want to hear it. What's the average time you spend researching an episode of Geekish Lesson?
Between 6 and 8 hours, I would say.
Yeah, I think Mr. Miracle took me about 5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Depends on how much you have to read.
Exactly. So, my friends, I'm going to ask you this. If this podcast, Geekish Lesson, has ever given you a laugh or given you a cool fact that you told to your friends at a party, then consider heading over to our Patreon and helping us out. It's a value for value trade. We give you value, our value is entertainment, and you can help us out with research times and hosting costs. Even just $1 a month really helps us. So if you don't contribute over there at Patreon, I'm going to ask you, please, this month, consider it. But please, going over to the Patreon is also the only way you can hear our exclusive behind-the-scenes interview with Mitch Garrett about his career, specifically about his career. That's part of Geek History Lesson Extra, and we have all kinds of other things, including movie live streams and Jason and Ashley's excellent adventures. So head on over to patreon.com/Jawin to support the show, and thank you to all of our current patrons.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So I'm going to start synopsizing the Jack Kirby series and some of the plots that were used, Ashley.
I am excited for this because I don't know if it can get any crazier.
We'll get a little bit crazier. Vermin Vundabar kidnaps Big Barter, and to rescue her, Mr. Miracle must submit to being put in Vundabar's murder machine.
Great.
Another one is Mr. Miracle agrees to let the bombastic promoter Funky Flashman handle his upcoming tour, but the female Furies of Apocalypse attack him, and Big Barda forcing a change of plans.
There's a lot of alliteration going on, and as an English major, I really admire that.
Another one is Mr. Miracle and Barda return to Apocalypse to confront their attackers, and Miracle is captured by Kanto, the Master Assassin.
Yes.
Another one is, of course, is while Big Barter enlists the female Furies to help her find Mr. Miracle, Miracle himself is fighting a deadly battle within the mind of the Lump.
The Lump?
The Lump.
Jesus.
Now, as I said, the two of them together use their powers, equipment, and skills in the war against Darkseid. And Darkseid was still actually interested in capturing both of them. Eventually, though, tired of being chased on Earth by Darkseid's servants, Scott returned to Apocalypse and won his freedom by legal means through a trial by combat.
I was going to be like, Scott, no, don't go back to Apocalypse.
Eventually, this all leads to the wedding of Big Barter and Mr. Miracle, which we fortunately all were invited to in Mr. Miracle number 18. Highfather and crew rescue Scott and Big Barter, and they soon have to say goodbye to Oberon as Highfather marries them both in front of all the new gods.
Does she walk down the aisle to him, or does he walk down the
aisle
to her?
No, it's kind of like really quickly, like next to a floating car. They both touch Highfather's staff, and Big Barda says, I am eternal with Scott. And Scott says, I am eternal with Barda. And then it is done, so says Highfather.
Oh, I like that. That's really sweet.
And then they're married. And then the book is canceled.
Oh, no. Yep. And then they're divorced.
Well, actually, Jack Kirby's run on the book is canceled because Kirby was never allowed to finish his fourth world storyline. It all ends on cliffhangers.
What? The injustice.
Yep, because the books were all not selling well. But the fun fact about it is that Mr. Miracle was the most popular one. So Mr. Miracle was actually allowed to continue. It was just written by different people.
I didn't know that it was the most popular.
Yep. So the rest of the issues in that volume, the last 7 issues, kind of downplayed all the fourth world mythology in favor of traditional superhero fare. Now, the abrupt cancellation of this fourth world saga was the first sign of Jack Kirby basically abandoning DC. And this led to Scott becoming a guest star in the DC universe for about the next decade or so.
Great.
Now,
this happens to a lot of characters if you've not been around Geek History Lesson for a very long time. Yeah.
Now, it is also to be known that eventually Scott acquired the complete anti-life equation. This is the equation that Darkseid is looking for to control the universe is its ultimate desire. However, Scott's will was strong enough to resist the temptation to use it. Because remember, Ashley, he has what kind of will?
The best.
Indomitable.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was his special skill. I was not wrong.
Now, Scott Free later became a member of the Justice League International, as did Barda and Oberon.
Ooh, I love that team.
And they recast him in that book as a semi-retired superhero that sought to live quiet lives in the suburbs. And they really weren't involved in the Justice League-related adventures.
You see them, like, eating cereal and stuff all the time. Yeah. It's real weird.
Well, they actually made Scott Free as sort of, like, a husband who often found himself on the receiving end of his wife's temper because he would sneak off to go do Justice League adventures.
Yes. Yeah. I remember that now. Yeah.
During his time in the league, Scott developed an intense rivalry with Justice League villain Magna Khan, not Noonien Khan. Singh, but MagnaCon.
MagnaCon.
Or not Genghis, or Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan.
Now, the villainous intergalactic trader and black marketer repeatedly kidnaps Scott, ultimately convincing Scott's former manager. You're going to miss something important here.
I'm sorry.
He kidnaps Scott, and he convinced Scott's conniving former manager, Funky Flashman, remember him?
Oh, God.
Into 14 documents forcing Scott to work for Magna as his personal entertainer.
Okay.
Yep. To force him to go along willingly, Khan replaced Scott with a lifelike robot who was ultimately murdered.
Another robot.
Yep. Let me finish these sentences, please.
Sorry.
To force him to go along willingly, Khan replaced Scott with a lifelike robot who was ultimately murdered by Despero during his first mission with the Justice League. So that's the reason why Big Barda didn't think he was gone, because there was a life robot.
Oh, my God.
Scott ultimately escaped Magna Khan's clutches and reunited with his wife and friends through the shock. Although the shock was not enough to, you know, ultimately make everybody in the league be like, oh, my God, you're alive, right? Mm-hmm. So Scott eventually quit the league and let his protege, Shiloh Norman, he will come back. Mm. If you've ever read Seven Soldiers, you know that name, take over for him in the league.
Cool.
Now, in Action Comics number 593, John Byrne created one of the weirdest stories involving Darkseid and Scott Free into canon. Now,
it's a high bar.
Yeah, well, it gets weirder. So they actually hit a major bump in their love story in this storyline because Barda and Superman were captured by a villain known as Sleaze, who was actually a god exiled from Apocalypse, who had the power to control minds. Sleaze forced the two heroes to perform in an adult movie.
I mean, are we surprised? That's the it's in the name.
Yeah. Now, the adult movie, of course, was filmed. And, of course, had Barda and Superman getting down. Darkseid found out about it. And instead of stopping it, sat himself on Mr. Miracle's couch, waiting for him to come home to hand deliver the videotape.
Oh, my God. He is like the Kardashians.
Because that's how Darkseid rolls.
That's so weird.
Now we're going to skip ahead some years later. And during the story arc of Death of the New Gods, which happened right before Final Crisis. And the reason I'm doing that is because, again, Mr. Miracle for most of the 90s was just a guest character.
That's fine.
The gods of both Apocalypse and New Genesis were attacked by a god killer. Barda was amongst the gods who were killed.
No, yep. I knew about that.
And the distraught Scott debated whether or not to use the anti-life equation, which he knew, to resurrect her. Mm-hmm. The search for the killers led him, Superman, and Orion to New Genesis, where Scott did use the anti-life equation to resurrect the Forever People, who then gave him a clue that the murderer was likely to be Infinity Man. However, Scott became convinced, though, even though of that, that Orion was the killer, and a short time later, Orion, too, was killed, and a journey to the Source Wall for Scott revealed that Infinity Man was actually the god killer. He should have believed his original information. And eventually Mr. Miracle and Metron became the final two victims of Infinity Man.
Aww.
And that's when the fourth world gods were all dead.
Dun, 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 dun. Great geek history lesson.
Yep. But following the Infinite Crisis, most of the gods were reborn, including Scott and Barda, and thus began the fifth world. But real quick, let's talk about Shiloh Norman. I mentioned him a little bit earlier.
Yes.
Shiloh Norman, of course, was the informal ward of Thaddeus Brown. Remember him? He's where Scott got the costume from. He also served Scott, and he served as Scott's occasional stand-in. And of course, he helped Big Barda, Mr. Miracle, all the time. Now, after their deaths, Shiloh took over the mantle again, and he appeared as a successful and well-paid escape artist using the name Mr. Miracle. He became famous for large-scale televised stunts, including well-publicized escapes from the second dimension, the center of Earth, and also a black hole.
So he's like a sellout TV magician.
He does, yeah. These stunts allowed him to live a lavish celebrity lifestyle. But within the hole, when he went through the black hole, Shiloh had a vision of a familiar but different life spanning years. In his vision, he still possessed a mother box, but he had no memory of the new gods. And Shiloh saw all of his friends fall to the anti-life equation, which Darkseid subjected him to in the Omanxious Sanction, which he lived through basically a series of oppressive lives, one after one after one. Shiloh lived this torture.
Wow.
Upon escaping from this trap, Shiloh found himself in the black hole where he first met Metron 7 days later in Seven Soldiers 1. This led Shiloh to the Darkseid Club to basically free the new gods and free them from the Shida, and this led to basically all the new gods being reborn, because the fourth world, fifth world thing is kind of like a weird paradox that happens in Seven Soldiers. Yeah. It's really really confusing, but basically just to say all the new gods get reborn.
There you go. Hooray.
Yeah.
They're back.
And then we briefly see Mr. Miracle in the New 52. Ashley, what is the New 52?
In 2011, DC decided that post-Barry Allen running back in time because he missed his mommy and resetting the universe, everybody had only been a superhero for 5 years and got more lines on their costumes.
That's right. And in this universe, after escaping from the clutches of Steppenwolf, who is going to be the villain of Justice League,
dun, dun, dun.
Mr. Miracle and Barda go on the run from both Steppenwolf and the World Army on Earth 2.
Hey!
That's the Earth where Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman were killed in Darkseid's first invasion. Mr. Miracle meets a retired escapologist named Shiloh Norman, who gives Scott the stage name of Mr. Miracle and his costume.
That's
and
cool.
Scott imbues Shiloh with the science of Apocalypse. While looking for Batman in Gotham City, Steppenwolf sends Fury to capture and return them. And after a brief scuffle, Mr. Miracle helped Barda escape, and they find Batman. And they decide to face Fury, Steppenwolf's lackey, all by himself. But eventually they were interrupted by the Red Tornado and the World Army. They also get involved with a big event called Darkseid War, which could literally be a lesson on its own, so that's why I'm not going to talk about it. But it's basically they fight the new gods, they fight Darkseid. Ping, 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 there's a mother box.
Fun fact, Red Tornado, also a robot.
That's
lots
right,
of robots.
Lots of robots. And then, of course, they will be showing up in the new series by Tom King and Mitch Garris, which should be in comic stores this week. That is it for the Mr. Miracle lesson.
That was awesome.
All right.
You made me want to read more Mr. Miracle.
Okay. So let's move into the recommended reading.
Yes, where Jason is going to recommend a whole bunch of stuff that you can pick up and check out if you like this lesson. If you want to know more about Mr. Miracle, you can find this in our catalog at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. There's an Amazon widget. You click on the one you want, you get it, and a little bit of support comes back our way.
That's right. The first book I'm going to recommend is Mr. Miracle by Jack Kirby. It's a new edition of the new series that's going to be released. It's really cool. So if you want to read all those series that I talked about, it's where Big Barda and him get married. It's great. Go read it. The next one I'm going to recommend is Seven Soldiers Volume 1. There are four volumes of Seven Soldiers.
Yes.
This is the Shiloh Norman book, but there is a Mr. Miracle miniseries in there, and I think it's great. I love Seven Soldiers. It's really good superheroing by Grant Morrison, and it delves very deeply into the fourth world.
Yes.
And then also, finally, I'm going to recommend the Fourth World Omnibus. So if you want to dive even deeper into that world, it's the best way that you're going to understand Jack Kirby's metatextual idea for the whole world. You're only going to get that by reading the Fourth World Omnibus.
Love it.
All right. So we're going to move into our discussion.
Ooh.
And our discussion is with the artist behind the stunning new take of Mr. Miracle with Tom King. Now, I've read the first issue already. It's spectacular. And Mitch is known for his work on Batman, Punisher, and Sheriff of Babylon. Please welcome to the podcast, Mitch Garrods. Welcome to Geek History Lesson, Mitch.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk to my two most favorite people in the world.
What?
Oh, you heard it here first. Exclusive. It's official.
It's gone on record.
It is on the record now. Now, Mitch, I want to ask you, we're talking about Mr. Miracle, and I want to ask, when you first started this project, when you first started the designs for Mr. Miracle, were you intimidated by walking into Jack Kirby's fourth world?
So this is going to sound super cocky and very unlike me, but no, I was not. only based on the way you phrased that question. So as far as coming in and designing and all that, I wasn't. Only because I knew I was going to change almost nothing. Kirby's designs for these characters are perfect. And I think a lot of costume updates these days are done just for the sake of doing something different. Whereas I think these Kirby designs were perfect right out of the get-go. So the things I've changed on each character are extremely minimal. Like Mr. Miracle himself, I just felt like he needed part of my thing with Mr. Miracle is he only wears the cape when he is doing a ceremonial thing, whether that's performing as an escape artist or, being a leader, a general of New Genesis, he wears it, but otherwise he doesn't. And so when he doesn't wear it, he doesn't really have too much green on his costume. And I kind of wanted to fold that green back in. So I gave him some green runner, like stripes down each side. That's it. That's the only thing I changed.
Did you go back and read any of those original Mr. Miracle stories for inspiration when you were thinking about boldly bringing green back?
yeah, absolutely. I've read the Mr. Miracle series and the New Gods series probably 3 or 4 times just since I started the gig.
Wow.
I have a long history with Mr. Miracle himself. I kind of have, he's one of those characters that's very important to my whole comic upbringing. My second oldest brother, the one who was super into comics, he got me into Mr. Miracle early on. Strangely, not the Jack Kirby issues, but the Marshall Rogers, Englehart issues. And so I've always had this love for the character. And then when I got the gig, I was beyond excited.
Well, we have a question from one of our patrons over at patreon.com/Jawin. And Adrian Gunter wants to know from you, what do you think makes Scott an interesting character? What do you like the most about him?
The thing I like most about Scott Free, the thing is, there's so much to like about the guy. He's a very likable character. One of the things that makes Scott so interesting is amongst all these new gods who kind of know their gods, they're very aware that they are celestial bodies, whereas Scott Free doesn't think that. He's very down to earth, and I think that's a real cool way to bring a reader into the story, because, you know, we're all normal people. And so we get to see this through his eyes of being a normal person amongst gods.
So what is the main theme for the artwork in this book? You've touched a little bit on that so far. And are there any styles that you're playing with to make that come across? Take us behind the curtain.
Yeah, I'm definitely doing something different for this book. I try to do something a little different for each different title I do. I just kind of let it happen naturally, too. But this one, I really wanted to kind of go a little more experimental. Is a very generic term, but I guess that works. Kind of almost Bill Sienkiewicz. I went through a lot of inspiration right before I started the book with a lot of like 60s and 50s illustrators, Austin Briggs or Al Parker, Andrew Loomis, Robert McGinnis, and kind of just try to fold that into the line art and trying different things and different brushes and different techniques.
Now, what would you say, like, what is the difference between you have drawn on Batman and Sheriff of Babylon, even Punisher, and you, like, what many of our listeners may not know, you pencil, ink, and color yourself. So, like, can you tell us a little bit about, like, what is the difference between working on Batman for you compared to working on Mr. Miracle?
Yeah, so Batman, I went a little cleaner with the lines, make it, you know, kind of that classic Batman feel, but at the same time adding that Mitch Garrett's Tom King grit and charm to it. But yeah, with Mr. Miracle, I just kind of approached it from a bit more organic place. It's a bit more. If you go read, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners and viewers have, but if you read those early New Gods books and Mr. Miracle, they're insane. Like, they're genius, but they're just shy of, like, crazy.
Oh, they are, and very much crazy. I don't think just shy. They are crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's where I've kind of tried to fold in some of the techniques with my line and colors in this book. Whereas Batman and Sheriff of Babylon, I did in a very, you know, Batman's cape is this color and blah, 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 blah. Everything, you know, the sky is blue and all that stuff. But with Mr. Miracle, I kind of go a little bit more crazy. So sometimes, like, the background has no color. Sometimes the background is just kind of a weird wash. Sometimes the background is a fully rendered thing. And it kind of all just, you'll kind of get an idea as you read the book of why things are colored and drawn the way they are compared to other parts of the book, which might be colored and drawn a different way.
Ooh, something to look out for.
So, yeah.
Stepping outside of the Scott Free box a little bit, is there a fourth world character that you're super jazzed to finally be able to draw, especially since you're a fan?
Well, the answer I know everyone wants to hear, and it's the actual answer, is Big Barda.
Yes.
That is the correct
answer. So much
fun
to draw. And the best part of Big Barda I've found, and not every artist who has done Mr. Miracle has done this, but I have a sizable size difference between Mr. Miracle and Big Barda, and that's really fun to play with. the scene I'm drawing right now. They're just kind of having brunch and talking to each other. And you see that height difference, and it's really fun to play with it.
I love that.
Now, let me ask you, because I come from a film background, and especially when you put a taller actor against a shorter actor, sometimes it's really hard to choose the right angle to, like, get them both in the same frame. Are you discovering that you're having that same problem between Scott and Big Barda?
Oh, 100%. because if there's a shot where I know I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome, it's got Barda and Scott in it, and Scott's going to have this cool reaction. But then all of a sudden I see the reality of it, and I go, oh, Scott's face is going to have to be this small in order to fit Barda into that frame. So that's been a little hard to play with, but also just the way that me and Tom kind of tell stories together. I can do a lot of cool things where I can split one scene into two panels, and, you know, he's off to the left, she's off to the right. And then all I need to do is scale the background different. So then which is also a fun trick as you read the book, where you see Scott standing there talking with a background behind him, and then you see Barda talking, same background, but it's blown up. So you get that size difference.
Let me ask you this, too, as the artist of this book. How tall would you see Big Barda as, and how tall do you see Scott Free as? Like, just this rough estimate. I'm very curious.
Oh, geez.
Like, is Big Barda 6'5"?
I've got her probably a good foot and a half taller than Scott.
Whoa! I love that.
she's a biggin'. She's a big, beautiful lady. And Scott, I've kind of kept as kind of not scrawny, but definitely like a soccer player build. So he's a little more lean, a little more active.
Another question from one of our awesome patrons, Ryan Rains. He asked, since your Batman Swamp Thing crossover with Tom King was so freaking awesome, says Ryan, if you could draw a crossover comic between any two characters or teams from any universe, who would you choose?
I'm so excited that you asked this question, because so this is a book that I always pitch to Tom and I pitch to Jamie, and they always think I'm joking, and I'm totally not.
Oh, put it out. Let's make it happen.
And especially I want to do this. So I'm having a kid in September, and I realized that I can show this kid none of these books I've worked on for like 16 years. So I want to do something, just a one shot that's a little more age appropriate. And I have the best idea. So it's Streaky the Supercat along with Sticky Joe from Teen Titans Go.
Yes. Yes.
And it's called Sticky and Streaky.
Well, listeners out there, if you want that book to happen, tweet at DC Comics.
And at Jamie S. Rich.
And at Jamie S. Rich. Let's make that happen.
All right, so we have just one more question, Mitch. And for somebody who has no idea if they're going to read Mr. Miracle or maybe what it's about, what would you say to them to get them to pick up the book?
Yeah, so the easy elevator pitch for Scott Free, Mr. Miracle himself, is he's the superhero escape artist, which sounds fun. That's fine. But it's Mr. Miracle amongst the new gods, which are, you know, you've got Superman, you've got Batman, all these characters, and these are gods amongst them. So you've got this escape artist, you've got these big new gods, you've got all these other crazy things. And then on top of that, it's a Mitch Garrett's Tom King book, so you know it's going to be a little different. It's going to be a little weird. But we're just – and me and Tom are giving it everything we absolutely have. And I'm an artist. I'm not terribly great at pitching these things. I've kind of fallen over my own words right now. But it's really good. I swear to God. New God.
He swears to the new gods that it's really good. everyone out there, if you're very curious about Mr. Miracle, Mr. Miracle will be coming out the same week that you are listening to this. So if you're listening to this, run to those comic book stores and go get that podcast. And if you're listening to this in the far, far future, hey, maybe you could pick up issue 9, 10, or even the trade. We don't know when you're listening to this. Hello, future people. Mitch, thank you so much for coming to Geek History Lesson. Please let everybody out there know where they can find you on Twitter and online. And please feel free to promote Mr. Miracle anymore if you want to.
Will do, yeah. It's just at Mitch Gerads, MitchGerads. That's pretty much, if you go to my Twitter, that's where I'm at. Facebook, It's facebook.com/MitchGarrettsIllustration, no spaces. Mr. Miracle is out August 9th, which according to you is the day this will come out. So run to your store, pick it up. And even better yet,
store.
If you like it, if you pick up that first issue and you like it, please go tell your retailer to just put you on a subscription list, and then you'll get it every month. No worries. It's a Tom King book. This thing's going to sell out. It's going to sell out. It's a Tom King book.
Also, I just want to let our listeners know, I have gotten a chance to read Mr. Miracle number one early, and the art in it is astounding. It is one of those DC comic books that is going to change everything. So you definitely, definitely want to pick it up. Mitch, I'm so pleased that you could BoomTube in to be on this episode today.
Ping, ping, ping. Thank you, guys.
And I thought that was a fantastic discussion with Mitch. It was kind of cool to hear his design process.
He's the best.
He's really cool. So go check out his book. Mr. Miracle is in comic book stores this week. It's awesome. I've read it. It's really cool.
Absolutely.
You're really going to dig it. And I think it's going to make you want to go back into the past of the fourth world.
I hope so.
So, yeah. And if you want more of Mitch Garrett, as we said earlier, we're going to talk to him more in Geekish Lesson only at patreon.com/John. All right, let's move into the teaching tweet.
Where in 140 characters or less, Professor Jason is going to sum up everything he just taught us about Mr. Miracle scot-free.
Mr. Miracle, his fourth world is too much for your mind. Give him time, and he'll break into our world, too.
I like that. That was like a poem.
Going deep.
I like that a lot. That was good.
And you can find that tweet, of course, at GHL Podcast.
Yeah.
All right, now we're going to move into the final section of the podcast, the GHL Honor Roll. That's for all you awesome people that go over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. This week, we're going to 5-star review. MD Wolves joins the GHL Honor Roll, and they say, I love the amount of knowledge on geek culture that I know nothing about. Mainly all the comic knowledge. I love all the stories, but I don't have time to read all the comics. But this podcast helps me get the best of both worlds. The two hosts make many dorky, kind of stupid jokes, but I love them. Thank you, MD Wolves, and welcome to the Mind University Honor Roll.
Thank you so much.
And if you want to join the Honor Roll, go over to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, and write up something cool and nice, and we'll read it on the podcast. That is it for this lesson of Geek History Lesson. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can listen to it on Spotify. You can listen to it on SoundCloud. There's so many options. Go subscribe so it comes to your phone or your listening device every single week. And Ashley, if they want to suggest this lesson...
like Mr. Victor Rocco.
That's right. Like Victor Clarence Rocco. Where can they do that?
Well, you can do that on geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, and again on Twitter at GHL Podcast. There's a bunch of ways to contact us in all of those places.
That's right. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. You can follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And if you want to check out some of the cool reviews and stuff that we do over at YouTube, youtube.com/Jawin. It's a recurring theme.
Yes.
For Geek History Lesson, I am Jason Red and Yellow Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson, and Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class from Apocalypse?
Bing, bing, bing. Podcast over.